Hey there, listeners. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. We're going to be hosting a live seminar. It's going to be held by video on June 19th. That's Wednesday, June 19th. It'll be 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be 90 minutes. This first seminar is hosted by Amgen. We're going to have three different team members with three different roles, with three different backgrounds, all veterans on the live panel. And just like on the show, I'm going to do 45 minutes of Q&A with the three of them. And then we're going to take 45 minutes and open it up to the audience to answer any and all questions that you have. If you have any interest whatsoever in about Amgen, about the biotech and medical services industry, about functional roles that are universal across every industry, I'd really encourage you to join. I would love to see you there, add some faces to some names, and have your participation. I think you're going to learn a lot, and we're very, very excited to kick this off. And also very grateful for Amgen's support, because by sponsoring this panel, they're helping us expand our work over here at Beyond the Uniform. And all of this is 100% free for you to join. So costs nothing. You can register through our newsletter, or look for a link on the site. Hope to see you there. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans and their families succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 278 with Eric Sabiston.
I wanted to help helicopter pilots get into the airlines, and the airlines have responded. They have programs that will pay for all the training, but in our travel, you know, in our journey in developing the charity, you know, a lot of us were enlisted. I spent 14 years enlisted. So we wanted to create programs that would help mechanics. And then recently, through a lot of advocacy, we have been able to help schools and airlines craft programs that would provide airline pilot training for free to any veteran, no matter what their job was.
In this interview, Eric talks about the challenges the airline industry is facing with an extreme shortage of personnel anticipated in the future. He talks about the Rotary Airline Group, which exists to help members of the military with any background enter into the airline industry. He talks about why veterans may love this industry and how he can commute to work for free from pretty much anywhere in the world. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to everything we discuss. You'll also find a link where you can leave a review for us on iTunes. And special thanks to username Royal Noodles, who on iTunes wrote, "Regardless of your desire to stay or leave the military, this show is rich with valuable resources for anyone in the military. I highly recommend anyone interested in expanding their knowledge base to listen to this show." Thank you, Royal Noodles, for that incredible screen name and that incredible review. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Eric. Well, joining me today on the East Coast is Eric Sabiston. Eric, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So for listeners, Eric is the founder and president of Rotary to Airline Group, whose mission is to significantly increase the footing of military and civilian helicopter aviators in the commercial airlines. He is also the co-producer and military technical advisor of Strong Eagle Media, where he has worked on four documentaries. And he is the author of the number one Amazon best-selling military book, Dust Off 7-3, Saving Lives Under Fire in Afghanistan. He served in the Army for over 14 years as an enlisted Navy Reserves cook, enlisted regular Army crew chief, and then Black Hawk instructor and standardization pilot. So, Eric, we'll spend the bulk of our time talking about Rotary to Airline Group, but I had two questions before that. First off, what would you like listeners to know about the events surrounding Dust Off 7-3 for any listeners who aren't familiar with that, and then the motivation to write your book about the experience?
Well, that was a great mission. I got sent over to the medevac unit when I was at Fort Drum, New York. Really, I had no choice in the matter. Ended up in a mission in Afghanistan with my amazing crew of Kenny Broadhead, my co-pilot, Julia, then Bringlow, who was my medic, and my crew chief, David Capps. Basically, what happened was my wingman was shot up and had to leave the area, execute an emergency landing. And we ended up being the only dust-off crew rescuing soldiers on the ground over about a long weekend period in the Waterford Valley. We ended up on the cover of Newsweek, and for that reason, I got approached by some folks to tell the story in depth. I wrote it on my own with Dale Dye, the Hollywood technical advisor, works, you know, Band of Brothers, stuff like that. And I wanted to do it because he let me do it my way. Mm. I got to keep the story truthful, which was important to me. Mm. And from there, I ended up doing some other stuff, some entertainment, documentary movies like Citizen Soldier, Danger Close, Apache Warrior, and the new film Above the Best. And I like it because it allows me to tell the stories of other people. I'm not real keen on pumping myself up, but there's so many amazing soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines out there who don't get that opportunity. And it's kind of cathartic to be able to share what you went through. It kind of normalizes in some manner or fashion what you've experienced. And I think it's important for people to know what goes on over there, not just, you know, what you see on the news or what, you know, the stories that people make up and maybe aren't so truthful.
Mm. That's great that you were able to preserve your perspective on it and not have it pander to Hollywood or to what someone else wants the story to be. What was the process like for writing? Like, how long did that take you? Was there any sort of rhythm that you found helpful? And I've heard it's quite difficult to write a book like that.
Okay, so originally I was going to write it with a very well-known best-selling author, but the publisher at the time wasn't keen on doing any more stories about Afghanistan. He said it was played out. And that worked out for me. I got real angry about it because I had researched it. I knew what I wanted to say. And I locked myself in my room over a Christmas break at Fort Rucker. And I wrote it, honestly, in about 10 days. Hmm. When I was finally connected with Dale Dye and his wife, Julia, who she's an amazing editor and publisher, they just kind of pared it down. They didn't really add anything at all. But that was the easy part. So it took about a year to get it approved by the Pentagon. Every branch of the military, whether they were involved or not, had to review it. And I think at the end, there was maybe two sentences redacted. They actually said at OSC that was one of the fewest amount of redactions they ever had to submit back. So I was pretty proud of that. I did it, you know, the right way. I didn't get in trouble. and then it went out with Warriors Publishing on it, and it did pretty well. But more than anything, I think it was just something that I needed to do.
Yep.
To get it out there.
Hmm. That's incredible. I mean, knocking out a book in just a couple days is wild, but it's also a good perspective to realize how much other work goes on to get it out there.
It's a lot of hustling. It's a lot of advocating, and you're trying to do that the whole time without, you know, seeming like a slime ball because, mm-hmm. you know, I was still in the military at the time when I wrote it, and I wanted to keep my job. So I was very careful in how I executed it. The regrets I have are that I wasn't able to reach out to all the folks on the ground. You know, there was, at the time, I didn't even have social media. I had to discover how to make a web page, how to work all the different social media platforms, how to work with my publicist and kind of to humble myself. Yeah, I've discovered no matter what I do after the military, whether it's writing or whether it's Hollywood or whether it's running a charity, you think we have a lot of acronyms and abbreviations and lingo. You have to learn the lingo and, you know, the professional aspects of the industry you're committing yourself to. And there's really no tolerance for you to say, well, when I was in the Army, we did it. Nobody wants to hear that. They want to hear that you're adapting to their world. So that was maybe the biggest challenge, is figuring out what the heck they were saying all the time, you know?
Mm. That's great. That's great. And could you talk about your work with Strong Eagle Media? I said in the intro, you've been involved with four different documentaries. What is Strong Eagle Media and what's the sort of work that you do there?
So Strong Eagle Media is actually run by a couple guys. The guy that I deal with the most is David Salzberg. Mm. He's a writer, director, producer. He's worked in the industry with his partner Christian for many, 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 many years. They made the award-winning film, The Hornet's Nest, which is pretty well known. And David is actually a veteran himself. He's a great guy. And his goal, I think, with the films they've made, these documentaries, is kind of like digital medicine is what he calls it. And it's very, very focused on Gold Star families, helping people heal from what they've experienced. He always tells me that you can do great, but it's more important to do good.
I love that.
These films don't, they're not blockbusters making tons of money, but they do it for the love of veterans. I wouldn't want to work with anybody else on this kind of stuff. So David and I are developing other projects right now. We have a couple TV series. We have a scripted project. But the new one that I'm really excited about is Above the Best. Above the Best is the it is the motto of the Army Aviation Branch. And, what it means is we fly above the best, which are the folks on the ground, not us. And so this movie covers three different stories. It's a story about an Apache pilot, Daniel Flores, who's author of the best-selling book South of Heaven, and a Chinook story, and a helicopter, Black Hawk helicopter story. It also features A.J. Tata, General Tata from Fox News. And I think it's going to show the commitment that pilots and crew chiefs have for the folks on the ground. And that's why it really fits with what we do at RTAG.
What is that process like of even creating a documentary? So like Above the Best, I love the premise of that. How long will it have been from kind of the idea to it actually being published? Like, what does that process look like?
Wow. You know, David actually had this idea a long time ago, I'm sure over 2 years, but the process of gathering the footage, going out to the different locations across the country and filming, I guess really the stars of the film, the soldiers who were in it, editing it, post, all that stuff takes at least a year.
Wow.
A great deal more. So you have maybe 11 terabytes of footage and you end up with an hour and 20 minute film. Another thing that we're very careful about is that any of the footage that goes out is screened in detail. None of us want to be involved in something that brings dishonor to the military. And luckily there hasn't been anything to report, but if there was, we make sure we go through every single solitary frame, every second of audio to make sure that nothing escapes that could compromise any service members now.
That's great. I mean, I love both in the book and then the documentaries, that attention to preserving the integrity of the military and not compromising that. And I think that, I'm sure there's examples of people who are a little bit more self-promotional and aren't as meticulous in their attention on those things. That's great to see. Yeah. So if you ran into someone who's currently in the military and they said, Eric, what is it that you do for a living? How would you answer that?
I tell other people's stories. I do it through film. I do it through books. But now I found a great opportunity to help all veterans. I want to tell the stories of veterans to the airline industry. So I founded a group called the Rotary to Airline Group. And our mission is pretty simple. After World War II, the amount of veteran participation in the airlines was close to 90%. But if you look at the industry now, it's not even a fourth of that. And that's a combination of factors playing into that. Like, there's not as many pilots being made, the draft's gone, the growth in the industry, the growth in air travel and, third world countries, everybody's becoming more fluent, everybody's traveling more. But over the last few years, you're only going to see Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, sometimes Coast Guard pilots, fixed wing pilots transitioning directly into the airlines. And that just doesn't seem right to me. And then nothing against, the F-15 pilots. I mean, they've saved my life. They've dropped bombs on bad guys. I appreciate them doing that. I didn't have guns myself, so I like guns, especially when they save my life. But the real air war in the last 18 years, it's not been happening at 33,000 feet. It's been happening at 2,000 feet and below. There's no Taliban Air Force. So the people that have been risking their lives in the worst weather, under the worst conditions, under direct, sustained enemy fire, making split-second decisions, you know, affect life and death, have been military helicopter pilots. Gone are the days of platoon and full metal jacket where we're just flying around VFR at treetop level and we look really cool. We're flying complex aircraft that are far more advanced than even in some aspects than the jets that I fly now in the airlines. So when you look at the training and you look at the experience, I wanted to help helicopter pilots get into the airlines. And the airlines have responded. They have programs that will pay for all the training. But in our travel, in our journey in developing the charity, you know, a lot of us were enlisted. I spent 14 years enlisted. So we wanted to create programs that would help mechanics. And then recently, through a lot of advocacy, we have been able to help schools and airlines craft programs that would provide airline pilot training for free to any veteran, no matter what their job was.
How does that work? I mean, so first of all, it's great. I hadn't realized that or really thought when you say it like that about there's no Taliban Air Force, it's like, yeah, I can see how the nature has changed to be much closer to the ground. I'd never really considered that before. How does that work? Someone has worked in some capacity in the military related to rotary aircraft. How do they get involved with the Rotary Airline Group?
Absolutely. So we're basically a social media platform. We're a grassroots movement. People always say to me, hey, thanks for what you've done. And I say, look, this is a massive Borg developing in front of our eyes. We don't really take the traditional route. A lot of pilot development associations charge money. So first of all, we won't charge money, not to veterans ever. Veterans will not pay as long as I'm alive. And so what we do is we work with schools and airlines, and we help them decide, hey, spend your money here. This is what they want. This is what they need. So we're kind of like an interpreter. We'll tell an airline, look, this, let's just say Air Force mechanic or Marine Corps mechanic has the following certifications and training. In order for them to meet the intent of federal regulations, they need to do X, Y, and Z. If you pay for this and you pay for this, this is what you're going to get. And so we have programs for, as I said, the helicopter pilots. Helicopter pilots who have military training can get everything paid for free. That's old news. That's last year. But then what I'm excited about is the fact that I can take a cook in the Navy and I can say, look, if you have the GI Bill, I can give you all the training for free. I can get you a job paying $35 an hour while you're training. And I can get you a bachelor's degree. I can get you the training done just to be an airline pilot and get hired flying a jet in 10 months. So in 10 months ago, you were cooking squash on the USS Nimitz. And then 10 months later, you are flying an Embraer 175 with 55 people in the back going 450 miles an hour. It's not a fantasy. It's really happening. Because here's why. We need... In the next 20 years, Boeing has estimated that we need 910,000 new airline mechanics, but we need 820,000 new commercial airplane pilots. And for instance, American Airlines, just one of the varsity airlines out there, one of the majors, they're going to replace half of all their pilots in the next 10 years. Some people say 7 to 10, because they're all going to be too old to fly. So the last thing that contributed to this massive shortage is the fact that after a very serious crash in New York State called the Colgan crash, advocates like Sully and several regulators and stuff like that stepped in and said, look, we need airline pilots to have 1,500 hours before they start flying passengers. Used to be 250. Wow. 250 hours, and I guarantee you have flown on a jet, the guy in the back who's only had 250 hours, maybe 100 flights in his lifetime. That's just ridiculous. So now you have to have 1,500 hours. So you mix that new hour requirement with the fact that it's probably $150,000 just to get the training, and you mix in the increase in air travel and demand for pilots worldwide, that's a perfect storm, and it's not going to go away. So this is the moment in history. This is the watershed moment where military folks can come in and get a career that pays $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month.
That's incredible. So what I'm hearing is it's if I'm understanding this correctly, it's like for an employer, this is a way to get insight into exactly the most efficient way to get people who can accomplish the job, the training that they need. And for someone in the military, there's a lot of options out there for education, but this is being paid while you're getting that education with a fair degree of certainty that you're going to have a job waiting for you when you're done, which is great. I mean, how many people complain about going to undergrad or grad programs and then they graduate, they've got debt from that schooling experience and they don't have a job, and you're solving for all of that.
And in addition, we're also solving for the instructor shortage, which is now, you know, the burgeoning big, you know, elephant in the room right now. When the instructors who are working 40, 50 hours a week in the air, and they get paid on the ground too, hourly, but when they're in the air making, you know, that much of their logbook shrink, when they're getting that much flight time, I mean, they're gone in a year. So who are the folks that are best positioned to come in, who have the discipline, who have the maturity, who have the focus to become an instructor, who are used to working in regimented programs and regimented jobs, who also have, unlike their civilian counterparts, GI Bill burning a hole in their pocket, who can, you know, not only go to school full time, but they can also teach full time. And that solves the instructor pilot shortage in the United States, which is almost worse than the airline pilot shortage statistically. That solves the problem of getting folks into the regionals where they're needed the most. For me, that solves the problem of getting veterans to hang out with when I'm in the airlines. And lastly, it creates a permanent hole. And nothing against my Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, Coast Guard brethren. You guys are great. I love you. I admire you. I saw Top Gun. I love the movie. I wanted to be you. But some of us took a different route. And if we can prove that we do a good job, and we do, then we create a permanent hole. Now, here's the question. What happens to the military? Because they're losing pilots all the time, right? That's an interesting concept. When you look at attrition and retention, it's atrocious. There's a lot of big words there, but that's what it is right now. We at RTAG, we came out of the military. And a lot of our members get out without 20 years. So we highly encourage them, through partnerships with the National Guard and the Army Reserve recruiting commands, to continue their service, their health care, their insurance, get that retirement and finish out part-time. And we're actually working now in discussions with leadership and the active duty components to try to help them recruit on the front side. So, you know, we're not taking a salary. We're doing this because we love veterans. We're helping the airlines. We're helping the flight schools. And we're now helping the military. So we're doing it without using taxpayer dollars. You know, recently the administration introduced a program called Forces to Flyers. It was an introductory program, and I don't know who cooked it up, but let's just go ahead and start using taxpayer dollars to fund this massive shortage. Why? We have the GI Bill. We're going to get a degree in basket weaving or history. That'll get you far. Why don't you use that degree to get a job where you could get, 20 days off a month and still clear $200,000 a year? Or maybe make $500,000 and work your face off. A lot of these cadet programs that the airlines are pouring money into, I think it's short-sighted. You're trying to develop pilots the way you did in the 80s. So welcome to 2019. This is the time where you need to be innovative. The power of social media is there. The word is out. These cadets, you know, you take an E-1 out of the Air Force's honorary discharge. I put him into the school like Infinity Flight Group in Trenton, New Jersey. He's flying glass cockpit Cessna 172s. He's making $35 an hour. He's going to school. He's getting his full BAH as an E5 in that zip code. And oh, by the way, once he makes CFI, the airline will give him a $5,000 cash bonus and a guaranteed job at an American Airlines carrier, travel benefits to fly to Moscow on the weekend if he's bored. Okay. And then at that point, he can go to Piedmont Airlines. And he will be hired at American Airlines, the mainline carrier, as soon as his number comes up without an interview.
That's wild. That's wild. And you gave an example earlier of like a Navy cook who could come in. So, the person doesn't have to be doing anything aviation related. Anyone who served in the military has the potential to work with you on this.
Absolutely. We want, in fact, one of the schools that's coming to our convention in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, April 13th and 14th, it's a free convention. One of these schools told me last week, I dare you to find me 300 enlisted people who want to be airline pilots for free. We want to train all 300 in the next 12 months.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. Can you, I'm wondering if you could highlight any of the success stories that you've seen or anyone come to mind.
So let me just give you one. My friend, Richie Mercado, he was a Black Hawk pilot. He did several years in the military. He just decided it wasn't for him. He got out just a little bit over a year ago, had never flown an airplane in his life. He was flying Blackhawks exclusively. He went through Envoy Airlines rotary transition program, got his airplane training in about 3 months, started flying jets after about a month or two of ground school, and he just upgraded to captain already.
Wow. So
his very first trip was with another Army helicopter pilot. Statistically, with the way things are flowing, you know, here in just a couple, 3 years, he has the opportunity to flow to American. But once he finishes his degree, he doesn't have to wait. He can apply in probably and be successful in probably another 6 months and get on with a carrier flying, you know, an A320 like Sully flew into the Hudson. So we are seeing folks transition to large major airlines within about 2 years' time is what we're looking at. For the big folks, though, like American, Delta, United, the big three, that may take probably about maybe 3 or 4 years for folks. Mm-hmm. But guess how many Army Black Hawk helicopter pilots were transitioning to Delta just 4 years ago? Let's look at the salary. This is a good comparison. If you look at the salary of most regional airlines in 2012, 2014, it's about $14,000 a year.
Oh, man.
Now it's more like $50,000 to $60,000. So, in fact, PSA Airlines yesterday announced that they're changing their hourly rate to just about $50 an hour to start.
Wow. That's great. I mean, it sounds like the story you're telling is one of an extreme upcoming shortage of qualified personnel and extremely lucrative career path with, it sounds like a pretty incredible work-life balance where you're working 20 days, potentially a month, and then having the remaining time to even take advantage of, it sounds like, some perks to travel around and for fun.
Especially seniority. I got to be honest, you know, you don't get those. You may have to prepare yourself for maybe a dozen days off a month to begin with. But every, you know, you're in the military, it's an NCOER, it's an OER, it's a
yep.
rep report, whatever you're talking about, there's no such thing. The airline only cares about who was hired first. So I had a buddy of mine that inspired me to start this group, Lieutenant Colonel Mitchell Bell, call sign Taco. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he said, look, man, in February, you know, I had gone to the Heli Expo, which is a big helicopter job fair in Dallas. And no, I couldn't get arrested. I was like, well, I got some experience. No one would hire me to fly patients from the hospital. After all my dust off experience, they said, why don't you go to the Grand Canyon and get some more experience doing tours? So anyway, my story, Taco took me aside and said, look, man, February, I didn't fly. And he made like 12 grand. And then March, he flew like a couple trips and he made double that.
Wow.
So you know, if your goal is to see your kids all the time, that's fine. If your goal is to live where you want to, I know people that live in Sweden and South Korea who commute to work for free.
That's wild.
Yeah. And if your goal is to make $500,000 a year, because it's not just the money you make, it's the 14% profit share and it's the 14% 401k. There's a lot of things that on top of that. And you can do that. Everybody has a different reason for exploring an airline career.
This is great. And I'm also wondering, you know, the other component of this was, what was it like starting your own nonprofit? And what was the most challenging aspect of that?
Well, I realized very quickly that pilots should not be running a nonprofit. I think the hardest thing was just investing the time. I'm lucky because any veteran could do what I've done. And my partner, Joshua Lee, I have to give him all the props. My brother, he's my vice president and he is the man. He does a lot with me. Tim Kirschbaum, Jim McClung, or our other board of director guys. But what we found is that you have to do all the work yourself. I mean, it's one thing when you have this incredible industry developing and you have the audience. And certainly I've done everything I can to build it up, but it's long hours. I mean, sometimes 12 hours a day, sometimes 90 hours in a week. And this really hasn't stopped from the time we started.
Wow.
For instance, the Naval Helicopter Pilot Association has been around forever. We're already almost triple their size in 14 months.
Oh, man.
That's through constant, consistent social media, networking, advocating, taking phone calls at 2 a.m. Anybody who calls me up, and this may have to end at some point, but they'll call me up and I'll give them an hour. I'll give them as long as they need. And I enjoy it because when I was doing dust off missions, it's pretty clear. I mean, you're just going to pick people up and they get shot. You know, it's very rewarding. And there's nothing like that now. It's gone. And we all miss the camaraderie. Rotary to Airline Group has given all of us a place to hang out. It's a social thing. And it doesn't happen easily, but starting the nonprofit has shown me that organization, time management, I've had to learn so many different new skills. Here's a former Apache helicopter pilot, Tim Kirschbaum. He's had to learn how to do order fulfillment and merchandise. Josh has gone to Capitol Hill and spoken with congressmen and senators. Jim McClung has had to learn how to be an event coordinator, how to book a hall, how to schedule food. You have to be willing to apply your ability to get things done with no guidance and take it to the next level in a task that you have no clue. So maybe we just fake it. Hmm. Maybe we pretend like we can do that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of what we do. And as long as a veteran has maybe a career or an industry that needs people, like I always think to myself, I wish I was an 88 Mike in the Army. I wish I was a truck driver because the trucking industry is worse off than we are. And the right veteran could open up that opportunity and create something even bigger than RTAG. But you have to have the vision, you have to have the opportunity, and you have to be willing to give up family time and sleep.
That's great. I mean, a couple things that stand out to me. One is what you commented on, I think, is a trend amongst the interviews I do where people who serve in the military really miss that camaraderie, whether they think they're going to miss it or they don't. Most people do. And so it seems like you're filling a need there for connection with others, for networking, for just hanging out and having that bond and camaraderie. And then it's great to hear, that it doesn't take anything special or special knowledge to start your own nonprofit or a company. It takes a vision. It takes a lot of hard work. It takes, it sounds like an ability to learn continuously, but it's not like there are a few chosen ones who have this gift to be able to do that. And I hope that gives encouragement to listeners that, no matter what I love about the theme of this interview is it's like, no matter what your background is, you can work with Rotary to Airline Group to pursue this career. And no matter what your background is, if you have a vision for starting a company or a nonprofit, you can do that. There is no strict requirements. There's no members only club here. And the tenacity and stick-to-itiveness that a lot of us learn in the military is going to be an asset in all of these things. And that's something we all have.
You know what's really cool? I mean, besides just the fact that I get to watch guys and gals get that conditional job offer and they all take a picture and they all send it to us and we post it up and we celebrate each other. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that the recruiters who are used to kind of a cutthroat industry where it's everybody for themselves, when they came to the convention in Savannah last year, they're used to maybe 10 people in an hour. We actually had the fire marshal keeping people back because there were too many people in the building. They'd never seen anything like it. But here's the thing. Every time somebody got a job offer, everybody would celebrate. they're not used to that. And I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm just saying they've maybe been exposed to some pretty selfish folks. And nothing against civilians. I love flying with civilians. I learn a lot from them. But when you're given an opportunity like folks in Rotary to Airline Group have been given by the airline industry, and we were grateful to them for that. There's not a lot of complaining. There's not a lot of whining. I'm not worried about whether I had to stay in a Marriott or not, you know, on my next trip. You know, I'm not worried about picking up some open time. So I think that there is an enthusiasm that you can only get from people hanging out, you know, in the military mm-hmm. that they've never seen before. And it's a good thing. It's a great thing. It's the best feeling in the world to me. And I want to encourage anybody who's listening to this, if you're interested in starting a nonprofit that will help other people in your chosen profession or whatever your area of expertise is, reach out to me. I'll absolutely try to help you in any way I can. But I'm tired of veterans. I had a friend of mine, and nothing against the trucking industry. I just talked about it. It's important. But he was a maintenance test pilot. A test pilot. Take a Black Hawk out and, you know, you replace the engines. And let's see if they actually work. Let's go up to 5,000 feet and see if this works. This guy's he'd been to combat multiple times, and he was driving a truck. And I remember when he finally got a hold of what we're doing, he's now flying jets for Envoy. Why not? Why should the guys that hump a ruck up and down the Conner Valley, why should they go work at Tasty Freeze or McDonald's? Why can't they fly jets? I have dozens and dozens and dozens of former infantrymen who are now airline captains in Rotary Airline Group, and they will take anybody. And they're not just, it's not just me. So these guys are just, and gals are just like me. They will grab you up. They will mentor you from start to finish till you get that job you want.
That's so great. I mean, it's exciting to think of the career possibilities you're making available to so many people. And in a way you've established that rare combination where everyone wins. You guys win, the employer wins, the veteran wins. There's not this zero sum here. Everyone is coming out ahead on this. And that's exciting to see. I'm wondering, are there any resources you would recommend? And that could be books or podcasts or movies or conferences, anything that's helped you in your civilian career that you would recommend to listeners?
You know, I'd be lying if I said there was one thing. I think the most important thing is to have a passion, have an opportunity, and to surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, who know more than you, and to maybe humble yourself enough to listen to them. As far as resources, the main resource I think that I found is Facebook. Facebook is a social media platform. You know, there's a great website called Airline Pilot Central, and it's the place to go. And it's great because you can look down, you can scroll on like Facebook, you can look and see, and search things pretty easily. But the immediacy of social media presents a challenge, but a different kind of opportunity. It's that information sharing on a wide scale quickly. And it's the power of visual, video. If you can get a hold of Facebook and get a hold of your own friends group and the Facebook groups that you're a part of and build slowly, start to utilize Facebook, professionalize, if that's a word, your LinkedIn profile, make sure it's up to date. And then another challenge is if you're gonna be, say, the girl or the guy that starts something like this, like a Rotary Airline Group thing, you have to be credible. So while I'm running the charity, I'm also learning how to fly jets. You know, I'm in training, and that is not easy. Most people can only barely handle that. And you know, by the grace of God, I was able to do it. But I kept thinking to myself, you know what? It's great to have this charity. If you don't pass training, you're going to be the guy that founded a group and then got kicked out of your own job. So you got to have credibility. Maybe writing the book and working in the film business kind of helped expand my social media footprint enough to be able to reach enough people. But, you know, if that's why, you know, I use social media, that's enough of a reason for me. But yeah, I think social media is where it's at. You can read books, The Culture Code, Leaders Eat Last. It's a great book, I think. But most of what I've learned is through mistakes I've made and through just listening to my friends. I rely heavily on Josh and Tim and Jim and all the other advisors we have. I don't make decisions on my own. And I've learned to not overstep my boundaries. So social media and listening to smart people.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate everything we've gone through today. And I always like to leave the last question open-ended, which is before we wrap up, what do you want to make sure listeners know, or what do you want to leave them with?
Trust yourself. Mm. If you're going to do something great, you're going to suffer. You have to. You're going to have to just accept the fact you're going to fail. It's like learning to fly. You're going to be terrible at it, and you're going to question yourself and you're going to doubt yourself. It was like going through SEER training. Do I really want to get beaten in the face again so I can put some wings on my chest? You got to trust yourself. You got to trust the process. You got to trust that, when you jump, you're going to hit some rocks. You're going to hit the side of a mountain. But if you keep falling, eventually the parachute will open. And then lastly, I just want to encourage everybody to come out to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, for the Rotary Airline Group Convention that starts really the night of April 12th next week, the 13th and 14th. It is free of charge. There's free food, free drinks, free networking opportunities. There's going to be the film premiere on Saturday night of Above the Best, with the director producer is going to be out, David Salzberg. You're welcome to come. It's 10 to 5 on Saturday, April 13th, 12 to 5 on Sunday. And if you're in town for the Army Aviation Association of America convention, we scheduled ours so that it would not interfere. So it starts and stops about 2 or 3 hours before theirs starts down the road in Nashville. Come on out, and we will commit to helping you achieve your goals in the airline industry.
That's great. Two things I'll add. First of all, I love that thought of trusting yourself. There was a quote it made me think of that I'll just read really quickly from William Hutchinson Murray. He says, "Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too." And I love that. That was the sense that came to me when you were saying that, is like, believe in yourself, be committed, take that leap. And I love the sense of providence moving too, as a veteran believes in themselves and in their training and trusts that background in whatever career path they're going to do. And then the second thing is for listeners, in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org, I'll add a link to the events, also everything we discussed here, so you can learn more. But Eric, I really appreciate the work that you're doing to help the military community, and given books, documentaries, nonprofits, full-time job, kids and family, making time for Beyond the Uniform today means a lot.
Thanks for giving me a platform to just help more vets, and thanks for what you're doing. Thank you to the audience for listening, and I hope to meet you in person soon.
Surface. Well, thank you so much for listening and for supporting Beyond the Uniform. Beyond the Uniform is produced and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our staff is entirely part-time. They do this on nights and weekends out of the goodness of their hearts to give back to the military community. Our director of outreach is Steve Bain, who relentlessly books guests, finds sponsors, puts together our newsletter, and thousands of other critical tasks every single week, all behind the scenes to keep Beyond the Uniform running smoothly. Our editor is Kathleen Dillon, who listens to and transcribes every single episode to help out those who don't have the time to listen to the show. It has a major impact on our site's SEO value, which helps people find us through Google. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge, who pours over the data each and every month to help us better understand how to best serve the Beyond the Uniform audience. Our digital production work is done by Michael Cummings, who puts together custom artwork for every episode. If you're enjoying Beyond the Uniform, the best way to help us out is by telling your friends and fellow service members and veterans. iTunes reviews, believe it or not, have a big impact on getting the word out as well. So if you have a chance to leave a positive review, that is greatly appreciated. If you know of a business that would like to get their product or service in front of a military audience, we are always on the lookout for sponsors, which helps us subsidize the cost of putting this show together. And if you haven't yet signed up for our newsletter, you can do so at beyondtheuniform.io. We send out a newsletter twice a month, and it is a treasure trove of helpful information for your civilian career and transition. And be sure to check out our coaching program, where you can be connected with a subsidized professional, certified executive and career coach to help you in your career decision making. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.